Hello, you're watching Global Investor on Business Day TV. I'm Stephen Gagnon. On the show tonight, Francois Mulock-Hauer from Resco Asset Management has all the global markets analysis. Then in our fund segment, we'll be joined on the line by Clyde Rousseau. He's portfolio manager at Investec Asset Management to look at their global franchise fund. All that coming your way shortly. First, though, a quick look at what's been making the headlines. Well, Comcast and Verizon are interested in buying parts of 21st Century Fox. Giants are after Fox's studios and also its TV operations. Buying Fox would give cable giants Comcast International distribution outlets, while for Verizon, the buy would be a departure from its core business. Siemens says it plans to cut close to 2% of its global workforce. This as demand for renewable energy outstrips that of its traditional power and gas division. Siemens isn't the only company to suffer. Competitor General Electric has also halved its earnings for largely the same reasons. And Volkswagen will spend more than 34 billion euros on electric cars, autonomous driving and new mobility services by the end of 2022. This as the company tries to catch up with other automakers and forget its legal problems. Here's more.
$40 billion is roughly the size of Jordan's GDP. And that's also the amount of cash Volkswagen is going to splash in the next 5 years to gain ground in the electric and driverless car race.
We're seeing the first successes of this strategy. Volkswagen is in robust health. This is, above all, the result of great teamwork.
Competition in the sector is fierce, and VW has ambitious plans. The spending will cover factories updates and the development of more than 80 new electric models by 2025. The group has also already committed to offer an electric version of each of its 300 models by 2030. But while it tries to shape its future, the German carmaker is also still dealing with its troubled past, hoping to get over Dieselgate sooner rather than later.
So, Volkswagen has made significant progress on the legal front. It's time for a new chapter. And, what we're seeing is almost the beginning of the return of the VW of the past with these long-term CapEx plans. There is some remediation still remaining in some of these expenditure intentions, but it's almost looking beyond that as well towards what they're going to do just strategically as a car maker in the 21st century now.
Clouding somewhat those prospects, a new probe has emerged. The US is opening an investigation into potential airbag failure in 415,000 Volkswagen vehicles. This after the German automaker issued a recall for the same issue in 2015.
So Francois Mulock-Hauer from Resco Asset Management in studio. Francois, we had Tesla last week also unveiling its new electric big rig truck, but it looks like there's got stiff competition coming in the electric space.
Yeah, this electric car theme is really heating up very quickly, and I think Tesla were kind of the first ones to come out of the boom and make big promises, but up to this point, they've kind of been not delivering as they should. And you know, the big car companies like Daimler and Volkswagen, they've been spending a lot of R&D, and they've been doing quite a few years of research on electric cars, and I do think they're going to bring a seriously good product to the table. And it's not just all about Tesla, you know? Mm-hmm.
So does Tesla retain its first mover advantage in the electric space, or does it get overtaken by the likes of Volkswagen and Daimler Chrysler?
I think Tesla's built a great brand. There's definitely a Tesla seems to be a cool car and people want it. But it's not like their sales volumes are really very high. So I don't think the first mover advantage is as big a part. I think once Daimler and Volkswagen come out with really good electric vehicles and you actually go and you test drive it, then you'll make the decision on your own. You know, a brand's only one part of the car. And if Daimler comes out with one that can do twice the range, or they just give you a better deal on it, then you're going to think twice before you buy a Tesla.
So would you be anxious if you were a Tesla shareholder?
I would definitely be anxious. I think, especially with the promises Tesla's made, this electric truck they launched actually looks super interesting. I looked at the stats. They claim fully loaded range of 500 miles, which took everyone by surprise. And they claim to be able to save you up to 20% all-in costs and 50% if you drive it in a platoon. Those are all kind of the typical Tesla big promises up front. I would be very curious. I'll be watching them closely to see how they deliver.
To what extent do you think that China's new stringent rules on emissions is helping to drive this push towards electric vehicles? Because that's a massive market for any car maker.
I think it's massive. These guys are responding quickly. You see it from the big car makers because, you know, Chinese government has a history of when they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it. And they do it quickly. And I think as soon as they start to ban internal combustion engines or just make it very expensive for you to own one, then you're going to see a massive demand, and these guys have to be ready. Especially things like your lithium supply chains, all these things need to be built up very quickly now to serve the demand coming. And I think with China getting on the bandwagon, it's going to come pretty quickly.
So this must also be good for the component makers for electric vehicles. I mean, you spoke about lithium supply chains, so anybody making those types of batteries should benefit.
Oh, definitely. I think any company with half a foot in the electric vehicle space is talking about it. A lot of companies benefiting, you know, outside of the automakers. The lithium market's looking interesting. The price has rallied massively. Whether that's sustainable, it's very difficult to say. But yeah, it's going to change. It's going to change the regular car type of companies that have benefited up to this point completely. And we'll see some new companies growing very fast because of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, another company that has to adapt to change is Siemens. It's firing 6,900 workers, so 2% of its global workforce. And it's also because it faces new technologies, so renewable energy overtaking its traditional power and gas business. Do you think companies like Siemens are moving fast enough to adopt these new technologies?
I think so. I think Siemens is a very innovative company. I think this announcement only has to do with the gas turbine industry that's going through a very tough time. As you know, renewable energy is becoming, also governments are pushing for it, and more people are starting to do smaller plants instead of your big fossil fuel power stations that use these big gas turbines. So it's kind of an oversupply of the industry at this stage, and we saw it with GE months ago complaining about it. I think Siemens is less exposed to it. It's about 20% of the revenue, that segment. But they also have a health tech business, which is doing remarkably well. They are... they have some products for factory automation, which is doing great. So Siemens as a whole, I think, as a company is okay. But the gas turbine market, I think it's going to be tough for quite a few years.
And, of course, Germany can operate fully on renewables at this stage. So I suppose German companies are moving into that space fast.
Yeah, and another thing to take into account, which will be massive, is with the fleet of electric vehicles coming online, you're going to have a big surge of second-hand batteries. So you'll drive your electric vehicle until you have about 50% capacity left because your battery ages. And once that battery has 50% of its new capacity over, it's still very usable in say, a power station or next to a renewable energy power station. Mm-hmm. So once you can store the energy, you can actually run baseload off renewable energy, which is great. So when the sun is shining, you charge your batteries, and at night, you can still draw power from your solar power station with the battery system as a whole. So I think electric vehicles is also part of the problem for the gas turbines. Guys are seeing the changes, and instead of building that big power plant that would have done in a few years, they're seeing, well, let's see what the battery prices are going to do and how we can utilize that to form smaller little grids of renewable stations.
Okay, so how about companies that are leading in new technologies? Tencent, it's had quarterly reports, results out last week, and we saw Naspers coming out with a trading update on Friday, its share hitting 4,000 Rand today, so doubling this year almost. And Tencent just seems to be on this winning streak at the moment with, I think, Honor of Kings, WeChat, all of those new technologies.
Yeah, Tencent's growth has been, it's been remarkable, really. It's an awesome company. It plays great themes, you know, like you said, gaming, cloud computing, you have fintech in there, and a couple of little worries there. I think if you're a Tencent investor, Honor of Kings is a big part of their revenue. I'd be a little bit worried. NetEase has a new game called Fantasy Westward Journey, which has done really well, which is kind of challenging them for the top grossing game. So I'd be a little bit worried about that. Also, the Chinese government, you know, Tencent's a very big company. They have been hard-handed in some of their policies. So you should take that account as a risk. But the important thing is that Tencent play many themes that you can play in other companies as well that look very attractive to us.
Mm. Your favorite, your preferred route for Tencent, would you go direct or would you go through the likes of Naspers?
I think I would go direct Tencent. I would be a little bit worried about the owner structure between Naspers and Tencent.
Okay. So Alibaba, also a Chinese company, it's reported today that it's buying a $3 billion stake in SunArt, and that's China's top grocery retailers. So shades of Amazon and Whole Foods coming through here.
Yeah, you do kind of see it. I think it was very interesting. I also think the price that they offered was, it was actually below market price. So another important thing is this flags the negotiating power of a company like Alibaba or even Tencent in China. You know, if you're a smaller company competing with Alibaba and Tencent, you're either going to get taken out, as in they're going to purchase you for probably not a very high price, or they're going to outcompete you. So I think that's very important. The Chinese, big Chinese companies are going to continue to grow, and the effect they have on the competitive landscape is very interesting at this stage.
So why would Alibaba get it at a discount? Is it because it's good for Sun Art to be owned by Alibaba?
I think that's exactly it. I mean, I'm sure they approached them and said there's certain synergies you can get out of this and all kinds of things. I just think Sun Art also might be thinking of, if we say no to this, where do we go? What if Alibaba just buys our closest competitor and kind of gears them up or gives them access to massive capital, and then they take us out of business completely? So I'm sure it's a combination of a bunch of things.
And does this also then give Alibaba a brick-and-mortar presence through Sun Art?
Definitely. I mean, they have many stores in China, and I'm not sure how Alibaba would use that, but we've certainly seen with Amazon and Whole Foods they have plans that seem very interesting. I'm sure Alibaba would look at something similar.
So to help with distribution and the likes.
Exactly.
Okay. Also in the news, Comcast and Verizon keen to buy parts of Fox. Deals that are likely to happen?
I think Comcast and Verizon are looking at it through completely different sides. The portion of Fox's business that they're looking to sell also has a lot of interest in it, so I'm a bit worried that they'll be able to get a good deal out of this. I think Fox will be the overall winner. Comcast might look at Fox's overseas asset, because Comcast currently only really get 8% of the revenue from other countries. They might look to diversify, and also I don't think they'll be allowed to buy Fox's regional assets. They previously tried to buy Time Warner, and that was blocked by the Department of Justice. So I highly doubt that would go through. If anything goes through, Comcast might look at, like I said, the overseas assets. Verizon, obviously, biggest chance of actually getting this deal going through, because it's completely different to their current business model. And what they're trying to do is, like most kind of cell phone operators in the US, they want to give you content as part of their service.
So.
And I think that's a very attractive package. If someone can offer you a cell phone contract with your home entertainment, maybe with your Wi-Fi, your landline internet at home, I think that's a very attractive product, and people will go through.
And is Rupert Murdoch a willing seller?
I think he is, yeah. I think Fox mentioned that these assets are for sale. It's not their whole business, obviously, it's only certain parts.
Yeah.
And they're looking to kind of scale down a bit and get more focused on what they do. So they are definitely willing to sell those assets, I think.
Okay, and we chatted about Alibaba and Amazon. We had Walmart, so a traditional retailer, trying to move into that online space. It came out with numbers as well recently. As shares were down today, Goldman Sachs has cut it to neutral from buy, and that's despite a long period of same-store growth.
Yeah, they've had 13 consecutive quarters of same-store sales, which I think just shows you how strong the U.S. competitor is, actually. Of course, with Amazon entering their space, it's kind of gloves off. These guys are really fighting for market share. But I think Walmart's held up well. But yeah, the U.S. consumer seems to be strong enough to absorb all of this. And in my opinion, you have to ask yourself the question, when does this lead to inflation? I'm sure the Fed is asking themselves exactly that. But overall, even though it was a very strong set of results, you can still see the Amazon effect in there. Margins were slightly down, and Walmart said, you know, we have to stay price competitive. And that kind of hints at, you know, Amazon's bringing down the prices a little bit.
Well, that's good for the consumer. Yeah. Francois, we have to leave it for a moment. We're going to a short break. When we come back, we take a look at Investec's Global Franchise Fund. That's with fund manager Clyde Rousseau. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. You're watching Global Investors. Still with me in studio is Francois Mulock-Hauer from Resco Asset Management. We're also joined on the line by Clyde Rousseau to take a look at Investec's Global Franchise Fund. Clyde, thanks very much for chatting to us this evening. So if you invest in the Global Franchise Fund, what are you investing in?
Yeah, good evening, Stephen. Yeah, I think the key point here really is that we're looking to invest in businesses that have, you know, very good track records of creating wealth over time. And most importantly, probably have a long runway ahead of them to be able to deliver those consistent returns, you know, for many years to come. And while that might sound obvious to most people, I mean, why wouldn't people want to own those kind of businesses? They're not that many in truth that genuinely can talk to a long-term track record. And because there aren't that many, the market tends to underestimate the value of a business like that, and therefore misreads the ability for a business to compound and grow investment wealth over time. And that's really the opportunity that we see.
So give us an example of the type of stock that would be in the franchise fund.
So, look, there are a number of different businesses from different parts of the market. But, I mean, if you look at a business like, let's say, a Johnson & Johnson, it's been around for 120, 30 years odd. It's grown its dividend for 57 years consistently. That would be one example. Within the technology space, Microsoft would be another business. It's a business that's reinvented itself, you know, time and time again. It's a big company. It's not a small business. It's not a startup. But it's able to keep itself relevant in a rapidly changing world. That would be another business. And then a business like Visa that, you know, clearly is the leader in terms of payment cards networks. And a lot of people say, well, Visa's an old company. It's been around for 60 years. But it's still relevant in a world where payments are moving online and no one really knows who's going to win out in terms of technology platforms, whether people are going to be buying on Alibaba, whether people will be buying on a Tencent platform, Amazon. But what you do know is that people will continue to be using some form of payment technology in order to, you know, to facilitate transactions. And therefore, you know, card network is not something that's going to go out of fashion anytime soon.
And I suppose you have to ensure that those big name brands that you are investing in are keeping up with the times. So as payments go more online or as technologies adapt, they have to be in front of those.
No, absolutely. I mean, if you just again, one example on Visa, you know, if you look at the sort of what we call the offline world, so a world where somebody goes into a shop and maybe purchases something from a Pick and Pay or a Woolies and use their credit card, that's an offline transaction. Whereas if you go online and you're engaging with your mobile phone or you're buying something on your PC, that would be an online transaction. And interestingly enough, that, you know, Visa has almost a 44% market share in terms of online transactions, which means that $1 out of every $2 that is spent somewhere online is actually going through a Visa payment network. And that's actually more than what it would be the case in terms of ordinary, good old-fashioned offline shopping. Mm. So it's a business which is definitely relevant in tomorrow's world.
Let me bring Francois in here as well. Your thoughts on Investec's approach to the Global Franchise Fund?
Yeah, I think I'd like to kind of get Clyde's idea on what he thinks the franchises of the future are. If I think of franchises of the future, I might think of something like Apple, like even Alibaba or Tencent, and then also kind of your current big franchises, what his view is on disruption. I mean, there's the example of Gillette. I know that's a special example, and it's not always relevant. But some of these guys do seem quite ripe for disruption.
Mm-hmm. Clyde, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, if you think about disruption, I think there are very few businesses in the world that are not ripe for disruption or not being disrupted. So, you know, I mean, as I make the point, I mean, you know, Amazon is a disruptor, and most people are very familiar with the big disruptors in the world. So whether it's an Amazon or whether it's a, you know, a Facebook or a Netflix or a Alphabet or even a Tencent for that matter, these are all well-known businesses that are perceived to be changing the course of history. But, you know, I think we're at a very interesting stage of the cycle where you know, those businesses might have been founded in incredible economics and have definite abilities to change the source of the future. What one has to be concerned about is that whilst those trends are in place, the market can overcook those trends and reinforce those trends. So many of the valuations of certain companies are very rich because the market's over-discounting the degree to which things will become irrelevant. So let me give you one example. We own a business, 21st Century Fox, which essentially is a cable broadcaster in the U.S., Now, cable TV is seen as sort of old school. It's the thing people sit down and watch TV and flick to the channels and, you know, you've got no choice. And whilst I agree with that, the key point behind the 21st Century Fox is they still have content which is incredibly valuable. And that content will be distributed over a variety of different platforms. So Netflix is seen to be the business that is disrupting the cable TV networks, and people are prepared to pay a $60 billion valuation for a business that has fledgling margins, very little cash flow, and ultimately it's just a streaming service with very little content. Now, if you don't have the content, you can't price how you deliver the service online. And the content is where the value lies. So people are underpricing the content of a business like 21st Century Fox and overpricing the ability to distribute it. And the same thing applies to Amazon. The perception is that Amazon is cheap. If you look at Amazon Prime in the retail space, but Amazon charges
between 60 and 90% more than Best Buy or even Walmart to distribute items. So people are prepared to pay for convenience. But at some point in time, a shopper's got to work out and say, listen, hang on, why am I being fleeced between 60 and 90% more if I can buy the service elsewhere? And I can probably have my parcels delivered, you know, at other places. So the view that economics is only going to accrue to these very large tech businesses, I think is something that investors should really seriously think about.
Because I was quite so interested in the fact that you, relative to your benchmark or relative to your comparative index, you're underweight stocks like Facebook, Amazon, Alphabet, and Apple. Is that purely on a valuation basis, Clyde?
No, not at all. I mean, we have owned Alphabet before in the past. We made a lot of money out of it. We sold it recently because we do think that the price is a bit heady at current levels. Apple is a good business, but I do think, again, that you know, people probably overestimate the degree to which their hardware margins are sustainable. It has a great network effect, but, you know, to be honest, I mean, the price points for their hardware, the simple devices, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad or whatever next generation, you are being overcharged for those items on their own right. And it's actually surprisingly easy to switch from Apple to somewhere else, in my opinion. So I'm not saying it's wrong, and I'm not saying that Apple isn't a fantastic business, and it's got a lot of cash and can defend its position. It's got all the characteristics we'd seek. But, you know, the history of, if you think about the components of Apple which are hardware-dominated, it probably is a business which nobody can really know what the sustainable margin is over time, and it probably is too high at current levels.
Mm. You gave us the example of 21st Century Fox and Netflix, and we've had news that Comcast and Verizon are keen on buying parts of Fox. Would you then be interested in those types of shares as well?
No, we wouldn't. I mean, I think what that corporate activity indicates very clearly is the degree to which the market is probably underestimating the future cash flows of these cable networks. You know, AT&T bid for Time Warner last year, and maybe that deal will get blocked due to regulatory scrutiny. But it is highlighting something which is very important, very significant. I mean, cable assets are not worth 8 or 9 times earnings. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, most people in the NASPERS valuation wouldn't value MultiChoice, which is an inferior business to a cable channel, on a 9-10% free cash yield. Most people put those businesses on 15 or 16 times earnings. And I just think that the market is getting that one horribly wrong. And when a corporate buyer comes out and is able to identify the value and potentially bid for those assets, you know, it tells you a different story. So look, I mean, the share price of 21st Century Fox has put on 15-16% in the last 2 weeks since that potential deal was announced. They've also had talks with Disney. So there's no doubt in my mind that this is an area where value will accrue to the holders of the content cable businesses.
Mm. Geographically, Clyde, the fund is, more than half is invested in North American shares. But relative to your benchmark, you are overweight Switzerland and the United Kingdom. And the UK, I suppose, is an interesting one, just given the whole Brexit dynamic at this stage. What are you finding of interest in the UK?
Well, I think just it's important to remember that when you look at the actual geographic listings of the portfolio, you know, even although you are quite correct that it comes out with an overweight in both Switzerland and the UK, the see-through revenue or earnings are way more important, and that is where the companies actually make their money. So whilst we are overweight Swiss stocks, only about 4 or 5% of the portfolio's earnings come from Switzerland. So it's important to remember that, and the same with the UK. We are not massively optimistic about the fortunes for the UK economy. But what often happens in a situation like that is the market tends to potentially misprice UK-listed stocks because it assumes that the UK market needs to derate because of Brexit, because of additional risk premium required on that front, and because of uncertainty around how the UK economy is going to evolve. And where we do own businesses in the UK, it's partly a function of that rather than being excited about those geographies per se.
Of course, we did see how the FTSE 100 did so well last year as the pound weakened after those Brexit after the Brexit vote, Clyde. Sector-wise, mostly in consumer staples, is that where you are seeing the best opportunities at the moment?
Well, again, I mean, if you look at our sectoral weighting, we have 28% in consumer staples, we have 30% in technology. Now, often people see those parts of the market as being sort of counterintuitive or at opposite ends of the same spectrum. Now, I think the consumer staples element, where, you know, is important in terms of building a portfolio that's resistant to draw down risk. And, you know, many of these big consumer businesses, because they've been around for a very long period of time, you know, even during times the market is stressed, and we haven't seen a market setback now for almost 10 years. Now, when that finally comes, and I don't know when it's going to be, those businesses will outperform. So they're very important to have those as a ballast in your portfolio. And then where you play to win is through investing in businesses that have higher growth opportunities, and that's where the technology, you know, comes through quite strongly. And we have a number of interesting tech businesses that are not obvious and not in that mega cap spectrum, like PayPal or Checkpoint Technologies, where, you know, these are businesses. Internet security is a growing opportunity, and PayPal is an unbelievably good business, which is so well positioned in the payment space as well. We're very comfortable that we have a good balance between defense and offense.
Mm. Clyde, is this a feeder fund?
So the Global Franchise Fund is either available in Luxembourg as a direct standalone entity for people who have money outside of rand. If people are not wanting to go through exchange controls, they can invest in the feeder fund, which is obviously available for a South African investor denominated in rands.
Okay. And the pricing, Clyde?
Pricing in terms of what?
So the TER, how much is it going to cost an investor to get into this?
It's going to cost about, if you go through the feeder fund, about 1.5%.
Okay, fair enough. And Clyde, thank you very much for your insights. So, Francois, your thoughts on the Global Franchise Fund?
I think it's a very attractive fund. I think especially as a feeder fund, you know, not all investors have the opportunity to kind of move their money overseas. And I think this is a great entry point to getting into the big international businesses. And I agree with what Clyde said. You know, even though it's an old kind of, some people would say, stodgy business, doesn't mean they don't have pricing power, doesn't mean they don't have very high barriers to entry. And yeah, I really like the fund.
Francois, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for on the show this week. Thanks again to our guests, Francois and Clyde, for their insights. Many thanks to you for watching. Same time next week. Goodbye.